Good morning, everybody. And this is Vertical Live Radio. And this is your host, Cystine Duckworth. Good morning. And today we'd like to say thank you to Marcus Game Face Boy for that nice intro called Take a Look. And today our topic is with Global International African Arts Movement and the Power of Your Story. Our featured guests today are Jackie Shelton Green, who is a great advocate of literature and writing in North Carolina, and she's also the founder of Sister Write, where every woman has her story. So we're going to be just enjoying the information that we're going to be talking to her, and we also are going to be talking to her about one of her recent books and one of her poems. And then we also have today poet and essayist Askia Touré, who is the co-founder and a leading voice of the Black Arts Movement. We have Richard Krawick, who is the publisher of Jakar Press, which is an award-winning online magazine that believes writing still matters. Also have the co-purveyor of the Global Arts Movement and author of Yes, We Be, Patrick A. Howell. So I'm really excited to have everyone on the program today, and I hope you are all ready and tuned in to listening to our program today. So first, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program today. Hi, everybody.
Hey,
hello.
How are you doing?
Thank you so much.
I'm fine. All right. Yeah, thank you. It's good to have you on today. I really appreciate all of you taking your time today to be a part and giving out some great information to our audience about who you are and about what you do. So I'd like to start out with just asking each of you to just give me a little bio on who you are, what you're doing, and where you're at, so our audience can kind of, you know, get a little bit of flavor of who you are. So let's start with Jackie. Jackie, would you like to give our audience just a little bit of information about you? I hear that they, you know, they call you the Billie Holiday of North Carolina.
Okay.
I like that. Reading that.
I received that. I'm going to try to be a little less tragic. But, yeah, thank you for having me. This is really an honor, and I'm humbled to sit amongst these wonderful people today. So I'm Jackie Shelton Green. I teach documentary poetry at the Duke University Center for Documentary Studies. I've been writing for many, many, many years, and I pray that I'll have many, many more years to come. This most recent book that we're going to talk about today, I'm happy to be on this call with my publisher, Rich Krawick, who makes a lot of magic happen for a lot of poets in the area and outside of the area, not just North Carolina. But I've been a creativity coach and cultural activist for over 40 years. And if I would be bold enough to say, even in my childhood, I think I was standing up for the power of poetry and not even understanding and knowing what I was doing. But I have always been a writer, and I've always been, more importantly, I've always been a reader. So living in North Carolina, living in the South, has informed and directed my work tremendously. And, you know, sense of place, geography, Southern culture, and family is the context and the container that I typically write out of.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Fantastic. And we're going to introduce the rest of our panel before we come back to Jackie and ask her a little bit more about her book. I'd like to introduce everybody to Richard Krawick, who is publisher of Jakar Press. And Richard, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I'm here. It's a free phone call, so I show up, right? No, I'm happy to be here, but I'm really glad you put together the show. I guess my background, I actually grew up with a lens of class. I was raised one street over from the Richmond Street Housing Projects in Brockton, Massachusetts. And I was informed very early by people whose voices were not heard. You know, it became very apparent to me that there were people who weren't being listened to, that were treated as less than human. And that just sort of like informed my own writing. And then over time, it also started to inform other writing that I wanted to publish and stuff too. So that's pretty much where I'm coming from. I'm founder of JCAR Press, Community Active Press, and it was inspired by President Obama. When he took office, there's a lot of talk about what we can do and giving back and all that, and I thought, well, you know, writers are out there and there's lots of opportunities. I'd always been working in places like prisons, homeless shelters, women's shelters, literacy classes, and so I founded a press as a community active press, where all the money we get, all those vast funds of money you get from selling poetry, will go back into publish other poetry books, to offer workshops in the community, and to also provide opportunities through donations, direct donations, to progressive organizations that we value, like Black Lives Matter and Doctors Without Borders.
Okay. Wow, great. That really says a lot when the message of your magazine, and you believe that writing still matters, and that actually is a great little line I got there. So welcome, Richard. We're going to be talking to you some more today, and then I have Patrick Howell on the line, and I'd like Patrick also to talk about a little bit about Global International African Arts Movement. How are you today, Patrick?
I'm good. Good morning. Good morning, Big Sister Celeste. How are you?
I'm great.
Okay. I'll talk a little bit about Global IAM, Global International African Arts Movement. But first, I just want to say really thank you to Richard Krawlik, and also Godmother Jackie Shelton Green for their impeccable mentorship and leadership and helping me to kind of get, to graduate from the sophomoric experiences of trying to be a writer to actually being a writer and getting me settled inside of that community. A lot of times, you know, even though I'm a very confident person and fellow, I always seek mentorship and guidance from folks that have been exactly where it is that I want to go to. So, you know, not only working with you, Celeste, but also working with Godmother Jackie Shelton Green and Big Brother Richard Krawlik has been an extraordinary blessing over the course of the last year. And in terms of Global IAM and how this all fits into that project, a couple of years ago, actually I should say back as far as 2005, myself and Marvin Mills sat down in a cafe not too far away from Loyola Marymount University, and we had connected online through our love of words, and more specifically Dr. Michael Datcher, who was the author of Raising Fences. And we just discussed where the world was at, where we saw a lot of the brilliant artists, poets, literaturists, muralists, painters, and we noticed that there was a common synergy well before Black Panther World ever arose where folks were doing some incredible work. And we were so inspired by that we just wanted to sit there and put a kind of a concept around it. It's not something that we really founded, just something that we more uncovered that was right in front of our eyes. And so in doing that, I started to reach out to a community of artists that inspire me, that look like who I want to be moving into the future. And Jackie Shelton Green was somebody that I had located through my search on Facebook, of all places. And at this time point, I'd like to read one of her poems that actually inspired a great deal of the material that is inside of my book from JCAR Press, Yes We Be. And it's called Who Will Be the Messengers of This Land by Jackie Shelton Green. Who will be the messenger of this land? Count its veins, speak through the veins, translate the language of water, navigate the heels of lineage. Who will carry this land in parcels, paper, linen, burlap? Who will weep when it bleeds and hardens, forget to birth itself? Who will be the messenger of this land, wrapping its stories carefully in the patois of Creole, Irish, Gula, Tue, Tuscarora, stripping its trees for tea and pleasure? Who will help this land to remember its birthday baptisms, weddings, funerals, its rituals, denials, disappointments, and sacrifices. Who will be the messengers of this land, harvesting its truths, bearing unleavened bread, burying mutilated crops beneath its breast? Who will remember to unbury unborn seeds that arrived in captivity, shackled, folded, bent, layered in its bowels? We are the messengers with singing hoes and dancing plows, with fingers that snap beans, arms that raise corn, feet that cover the dew falling from okra, beans, tomatoes. We are these messengers whose ears alone choose which spices, whose eyes alone name basil, nutmeg, fennel, ginger, cardamom, sassafras, whose tongues alone carry hemlock, bloodroot, valerian, Damiana, St. John's wort, these roots that contain its pleasures, its languages, its secrets. We are the messengers, new messengers arriving as mutations of ourselves. We are these messengers, blue breath, red hands, singing a tree into dance.
I like it. Great. Beautiful poem. Beautiful poem.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing that, Patrick.
Yeah, it's actually the opening poem to Yes We Be, which was published by Richard Krawick's Jakar Press, Jakar Press. And it's you know, the book itself is a retort to that poem and the call response, which is the African tradition. Typically, it's done in a formal setting of poets, and somebody will sit there and give a speech, and there'll be a call response that takes place in the churches, such as Christ Our Redeemer, AME, African Methodist Episcopalian Church. And the book is a response, a retort to to Jackie's poem.
Okay. All right. Beautiful poem. Beautiful poem. Thank you. Thank you for reading that for us, Patrick. So let's talk to you, Jackie, about the poem and about, you know, this is something that you choose to do in your own literature, right?
Yes. Are you going to introduce Askew? Askew? Mr. Touré?
I'm sorry.
Is the brother?
Oh, what? I was looking for another number on the line. So you are on the line, Mr. Touré, Askew Touré?
I don't believe he is, but I'm going to look into that and get that lined up.
Yeah, get that lined up, because I don't see him on the line, and I need to be able to see him to talk to him.
Oh, okay. I just didn't want us to miss him. So
So let's talk about who would be the messengers of this land, Jackie. Let's talk about that while Patrick works on getting Touré on the line.
Okay, certainly.
Let's talk about the inspiration behind you writing that.
So I wrote this poem several years ago. I have a deep connection as a Southerner to land. And, you know, land for African Americans, especially in the South, has always been a very valuable commerce. You know, we may be, you know, money poor, but land rich. And that means a lot in the South when we can continually pass down land from generation to generation. And when I can drive across, you know, spans of geography in rural Orange County, North Carolina, where I live, and just see the evidence of, you know, house after house, compound after compound of this lineage of how we have held on. You know, I talk a lot about what you keep keeps us. And for me, the land certainly is one of the most powerful manifestations of the word keep for my identity. So I started thinking about the land itself and the voice of the land, you know, and how water continues, riverbanks, creeks continue to translate messages from generation to generation. And I also was thinking about what the earth carries and what the earth conceals, you know, what she holds deep and what she hides. And in her hiding, things are born. So to actually think about, you know, food and to name food in the poem and to name the smells of the earth and the taste of the earth. And more importantly, as we the messengers, that we are the messengers and we've always been the messengers. And we have to continue to not take this amazing, beautiful land that we have, this earth that we have, that we cannot take advantage of it, but we must continually praise it. And right now that praise is about being very, very careful about how we treat our earth, how we treat our landfills, how we treat our rivers, how we treat our water supplies. So for me, it's just a very kind of integral poem of life and recycling of life, and also just paying homage to, you know, those who walked before me on the very ground that I stand on the very ground that I'm allowed to write poems on, the very permissions that I can go into my backyard and ask of plants, and ask of the herbs that grow there. And for me, being able to transmute this visceral experience back onto page is a part of my process, and it's what informs much of my writing.
Well, I love what you said, because I love what you said about what's buried in the earth and about the earth, also just about the earth. I always say that the land will release the secrets that are there, that are buried, that we shouldn't know about. So it's interesting you said that, because even when we just got through, I love the area of North Carolina and South Carolina. And I would say that, we, you know, just now, was a few months ago, we talked about how all the storms brought forward the one of the last American slave ships, the Clotilda, which is, I'm sure, going to be a lot of, you know, a lot more of history being revealed, a lot more of, you know, and, you know, when you say this, so it's interesting, because a lot of times our writers and poets are visionaries in the sense that we get our message from, you know, different places. Sometimes I like to say we get our message in the wind. And then it's interesting when you see years down the road, something shows up like this last American slave ship, and you're like, oh, okay, it's just the power of the story, the power of creative individuals. So I love what you said about this point. It also reminded me of, it also reminded me of our responsibilities as writers and poets. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is, what do you think of the current generation of poets and poet activists?
I was just going to ask, this is Patrick Howell. Since you had asked earlier, Godmother Jackie, Mosquia Torre has now joined us, and I was hoping to just briefly introduce him so that we bring him into the conversation. But Mosquia Muhammad Torre is an African-American poet, essayist, political editor, and leading voice of the Black Arts Movement. Torre helped to define a new generation of Black consciousness by creating a triumphal identity for the purpose of uplifting the African heritage beyond the oppressive ideas that dominated the time. He's the recipient of the 1989 American Book Award and also the 1996 Gwendolyn Brooks Lifetime Achievement Award from the Gwendolyn Brooks Institute in Chicago, Illinois. He and his associates, Tom Feeling, Tom Dent, David Henderson, and Calvin Herndon, were mentored by Langston Hughes of the Harlem Renaissance. Torre participated in the Fulton Street Art Fair in Brooklyn in 1961 and 1962, and the Black Arts Academy, influenced by artists and writers such as Ernest Chicklow, Jacob Lawrence, Leo Cardi, Elome Bryce, Ronnie Brathwaite, Bob and Jean Gumbs, Rose Nelms of the Grandessa Models. Torre became a poet who championed the Black aesthetic, and he's here and joined us on the call right now.
Great. And so, let's get some information from you, Mr. Torre, and great information from Patrick. So, Let's get a little bit more information from Askia Touré. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. And it's I'm honored to be part of the conversation. I think
great.
Our poets are our Jali or griots, and I think in many ways we carry the spirit of the people, of the land, and also the ancestors. And what Patrick did not say is also that I'm one of the founders of the Black Arts Movement with Amiri Baraka and Sonia Sanchez and late Larry Neal. And what we attempted to do was to actually see our poetry as part of the liberating process because we saw black people in the United States as like a colonized people, that once we fought in the Civil War and helped to liberate ourselves, we were not completely liberated, and we just went from chattel slavery to a kind of domestic colonialism. And so we saw our poetry, our literature, our art, as a way of speaking as a nation within a nation, and also moving our people towards true liberation from the colonization process. And apparently this process is ongoing because once we got out of prison, once we got out of chattel slavery and became active trying to liberate ourselves, the same people who had had us as chattel created the modern prison industrial complex, which is just it seems to be a modern version of slavery. And so we're
right.
still in the liberation process. But I think that more and more, I think our strength is to infuse our liberation values in the young people and the children so that we can continue the liberation process and maybe help to turn other people around so they won't be running around trying to enslave and oppress African people and peoples of color.
Wow, that is a great comment, Mr. Touré. That's something that we definitely believe in here at Vertical, and with working with Patrick as well, is our responsibility to be able to talk to our younger people and to educate our younger people so we can, you know, push the liberation forward, as you say. So I really appreciate you being here today so we can talk more on that. So, you know, so I think it's always been, even when Patrick and I talked about doing some series with Global I Am, we talked about the power of creativity to push the message forward. To push the message forward to our young people, and to also push the power of creativity. We've had so many of our art departments and our schools closed, or either, you know, decided that it wasn't really worth it when we really are creative beings. So again, thank you for being on our program today and giving us that,
I'm
information.
So I'm honored to be a part of the conversation.
Okay. So when we're talking about pushing this message forward, Richard, it's you know, when you talk about what you do at Jakar Press, believing in Writing Still Matters and working with Patrick in Yes We Be in that book. Tell me what you think about the importance of when you say believing that writing still matters. Why do you think writing still matters?
Well, I probably should amend that to say I hope writing still matters. We're living through a strange time where there seem, at least in North Carolina, a lot of people want to be identified as writers, but they don't necessarily want to put in the time to be writers, and they don't mm-hmm. inform themselves about what's going on. I think writing matters because that is still one of our primary communication forms, you know, after speaking. And we are going through this cultural change. With Patrick's book, you know, I looked back at the when he brought the book to me, I started thinking, this isn't exactly a poetry book. It isn't exactly a manifesto. It's got elements of both. And what immediately came to mind was Marshall McLuhan and Quentin Fury's The Medium is the Massage, you know, which were, and uh-huh. McLuhan was a Canadian cultural critic, talking about how, and I've done a lot of reading in this area, how the media, the medium that you use actually influences your thought process. And I think writing, if we're going to affect any sort of active, positive social change, I think it's good. This writing is going to have to be at the core of that, because otherwise everything's going to be just kind of transitory, temporary, and reactive. Mr. Torrey mentioned we need to infuse liberation values in young people. You know, to me, what better way to do that than by writing and by challenging the boundaries of writing? And you see that all the time today. You know, J.Cobb Press, I obviously happen to be a white person. I was not trained in the MFA program, though. I came from outside that program. I did take an MA in fiction writing. So as we started to publish and get submissions, we tended to have more pieces coming from within a canon. And we tried to figure out, how do we break that? How do we allow new voices and change that canon? And allow is probably not the right word. But how do we as a press and as individuals make sure that other voices matter, that other voices are valued? And as I said, I did this through my own writing, having grown up straight up from the project and kind of witnessing people who are excluded. So we've been trying to actively include as many other voices as we can in all the publications that we do.
Okay, great. And in working, give me some ideas of you know, I did see that you're helping Patrick with Yes We Be. What are some of the other projects that you've been working on recently?
Well, of course, we published Jackie, her wonderful chapbook, Feeding the Light, and her new, most recent publication, I Want to Undie You, which is a heartbreaking, again, it's an integrated poetry and photography publication that deals with the death of the too untimely death of her daughter. We also just recently published a book by Monique Adele Callahan called Anonymous, where we use one of her artworks in the cover. She's a very fine young poet out of Boston area. Coming forward, we have a number of publications. We have a New Voices competition every year, which allows us a second way to encourage other voices to come into that. We do have a publication coming out probably next fall by a young, really fine young Turkish writer. We're working on a collection, an international collection of women's haiku. And, of course, we're probably most noted in this area for the anthology Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch the Sky, which, you know, I give all credit to Tony Medina for that. It's primarily but not exclusively African-Americans addressing violence in their communities. And it's beyond a fine poetry anthology that includes New Voices as well as Pulitzer Prize winners. It's also an important historical document about how, because you never hear what the people in these communities think or feel about. We see the news stories about, you know, shootings in Ferguson or the murder of Freddie Gray, but we too infrequently hear the voices of the people that are involved, you know, the mothers that have lost children, the daughters that have lost brothers. So we think of that as an important historical document as well as a fine poetry anthology. Shadeed Kashmi, we published her wonderful Ghazal Cosmopolitan, which is part memoir, part poetry anthology, part literary critique of this Persian art form. So it's, you know, what we try to do is bring as much as we can in terms of literature out to the world. And then we bring our writers into the world. Jackie, recently we offered a free workshop for women who were survivors of rape. You know, so we're constantly trying to figure out how we can infuse writing into the community in a way that'll make people read and think.
Okay. I like read and think. Okay. Since you mentioned Jackie's book, I Want to Undie You, Jackie, can we talk a little bit about your inspiration about running to write that book, I Want to Undie You?
Well, it's very hard to think of the word inspired in the same context of grief in terms of burying a child. But what I understand about the power of literature is that writing provides me, you know, accessibility to beauty in my often broken world. None of our worlds are perfect. Imani died in 2009, and I did not write for several years. It's very difficult to write. I really wanted to write about her. There's so much to write about. There's so much to so much memory in the context of her last year of life. But it didn't come. It wouldn't come. And I just let it be, as I am training to do. I just, you know, let it happen when it happens. And I started writing a poem actually in my sleep that would wake me up, and I was capturing all of these lines on my cell phone. And at some point I realized, but I wasn't looking at it, I'm just capturing all of these words, images on my cell phone. And at some point I looked at what I was writing on my cell phone, and I started retyping it into the computer. There were 8 pages of poetics. So I allowed Imani to speak to me, because she is an ancestor now, and she's very present in our home and in so many things. She shows up. So she was the guide. She was the guide for this body of work. It's also, I would like to say that the words are hinged. If you think of a book, it's amazing photography that represents Imani from all different stages of her life, different photography that was actually translated into an artistic collage using the photographs that just were beautiful renderings that just melded into the text. So that's how it happened. That's how it happened. Okay. There was nothing strange or magical about it. But, you know, for me, it was understanding again that healing is a very difficult entity to disaggregate, you know. But I know that there's empirical evidence, you know, when we write and when we're exposed to music and art and how it reckons us with the experiences and aspirations of what it means to be oppressed. And even, you know, grief is an oppression. And finding myself around that landscape of grief, I had to dismantle grief. And for me, it was my creativity that was the facilitation of that dismantling of very powerful grief.
And I love what you said about, you know, that I never thought about it as being part of an oppression, you know. but I guess it is. We never hear that word mentioned, so that's a powerful way to describe it. One of the questions I had for you, Jackie, was, you know, Patrick uh-huh. refers to you as a poet laureate of the people. Patrick, mm-hmm. are you there, Patrick? You still there, Patrick?
I sure am.
And
yes,
okay, so I want to say, I want to ask you that question again. What do you think about the current generation of poets and poet activists?
Yeah, and I love this question because it's such an important question, as is the other question about. I look at the gifts and the voyages that are offered by the artists, you know, of this time, and especially in this time of strife. I cannot think of a time in human history that's ever been devoid of strife, of deep pain, profound loss, or just, you know, a very pernicious hierarchy and erasure that's very cruel. So in that context, I think the current poetics, the current poets, and the context of their own obsessions with survival and healing, I'm watching them investigate their own art forms that unfold in many, many ways. Writers need to write, creators need to create, you know. And I think that right now this younger generation is at a juncture of very profound discovery. And I think it's mm-hmm. a new discovery because I think they found new, you know, it's an old story, but it's a new methodology of how they're going about at this juncture of poisonous political ignorance that's around us. You know, they're looking at their work for insights that are offering, I think, a very rich context and a very generous nuance for, you know, what we see come out in mainstream media. They're offering insights about critical perspective that bumps up against mainstream media or very postulating, you know, politicians. And I think that's what they have to do, you know. They're giving us new mm-hmm. taste and sounds. They're giving us a new vernacular. They're giving us a new humor, you know, a new fragrance, a new way to forget, a new way to remember. And I think all of that's manifest in the bounty of this, you know, this particular current culture's creative expression. You know, we're dependent on these people to carry us forth. You know, I'm an elder, and I'm real clear on that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think this newer generation is transporting and translating new fragments of cultural context, you know, across the bridge of language and meaning and how they fuse not just poetry standing alone as poetics, but, you know, how it's fused with spoken word, how it's fused with art and dance. You know, and all the manifestations mm-hmm. of art. Last night I was at dinner with Omar Afendam, who's a Syrian-American poet who lives in Los Angeles, who's here for several days at UNC. And he's performing tonight, and we were, you know, having a conversation, you know, about elders and about this current generation of poetics and how they still have to look back. And what I was reminding him is that we were still here, you know, that we're still here and we're still mm-hmm. holding hands.
Right.
And we're still allowing people to stand on our shoulders and on our backs. And they know that they can come to us. And I think that's mm-hmm. what matters is that it becomes a very powerful intergenerational
mm-hmm.
movement, if, you know, it has to become
okay.
a movement akin to the Black Arts Movement.
Okay. All right. So when we're talking about
something.
That, I'd like to go to. Yeah, Askira, I wanted to ask you a question about your relationship with Amiri as a comrade. But go ahead and say something from what Jackie just said.
Yeah, I wanted to point out that I was honored to participate in the anthology Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stress. by my good brother and buddy, Tony Medina. And one of the things that I found very powerful was that the so-called veteran poets had united with the young people, the young emerging writers, so that it became a whole statement of a people. And I think it's important, too, that we embrace the young generation of writers and make sure that they know a history of what we've done, what we've contributed, and so forth, and discuss with us, you know, how things were in our times, how we attempted to solve some of the problems and develop collective voices. One of the things that we created during our times now, Dr. James Smethurst claims that the Black Arts Movement was the largest cultural movement in the history of the United States. Most of the young folks don't get anything like that or that history or anything. But we developed almost 20 functioning revolutionary journals in the various regions of the United States. And so we were, I guess, probably the most outstanding thing that young people emerging now that's still very strong is Third World Press in Chicago, the outstanding poet and educator Hakeem Madhubuti, and so forth. And one of the things that I would want to advise young people is to attempt to develop their own publications, speaking as voices of their generation, and so forth. You know, and of course, you know, we have all kinds of emerging media and so forth, but not to forget or neglect their own independent journals and publications. I was so honored to be a part of Resisting Arrest because I felt that it contained the voices of the veterans or older generations of poets and writers, as well as the emerging young activists and poets. And I thought it was a very provocative title, Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stress the Sky.
Yeah.
And so it's, I feel honored to be in a conversation with people involved, writers involved with Jacquard Press. You know, it was indeed an honor. And so we have to have journals, publications, and other kind of films even. A lot of the young people are very interested in making films and stuff. So we would have the cultural apparatus to develop and project our visions to our colleagues, and also speaking to, you know, modern America, let's say, at this particular time, which is in serious crisis, where you got maniacs threatening the school children, murdering the kids and stuff. So, you know, I just thought I'd contribute that we, the young people particularly, have to have the instruments that contain their vision, and also that point, that those instruments will point a way forward to self realization and liberation as a people and as an emerging generation. I think that's so important.
That's very important. Yes, that's very important. I'm glad that you you know, said that. One of my questions would have been at the end of the program would address that, because I would say in a time now when we have, you know, as you said, the people that are in politics, in a time that we have fake news, internet, you know, history that's not correct, you know, where, you know, what is our responsibility to young writers and young poets? I know that I find that we do a thing here in Arizona where a lot of the young people come and we talk about questions that they have about history. We talk about questions they have about origins. We talk about questions they have about how to tell the difference between, you know, real news, not news, almost news. We break down history and put it back together. So, you know, so when what you're saying, yes, what is our responsibility? Because at this point, as elders and griots, what is our responsibility to those young people that are coming up, the new movement of writers, poets that are coming up? So you make a great point, you know, with that. But I also want to ask you, Askia, is about your, there's a quote here from Amira Baraka that I'd like to read and talk about. One of the questions I have is, who are the poets? Let me just kind of read it. The quote was, the black artist is desperately needed to change images his people identify with. By asserting black feeling, black mind, black judgment, black artists must have an image of what the black sensibility in this land. We must seek a black politics, an ordering of the world that is beneficial to this culture and to this interiorization and judgment of the world, this strength, and we are hordes. So the question is who are the hordes?
The question is what?
The question, who are the hordes? And who are the hordes in this quote?
Well, Amiri's alluding to, I would say, the colonization attempt to the masses of black people. And you can see, as far as the oppressive forces, all the youth who are out in the streets demonstrating and so forth, they would definitely consider them hordes, et cetera. So I would say as far as we're concerned, you know, we feel that they might say, well, these people are disrupting our society, but we would say that colonizers and racists and sexists are the barbarians, not the young people and their elders who fight against oppression. So it's an honor, though, to speak with writers and thinkers and, to me, people who are shaping and molding the future and consolidating and developing a vision towards a new society and a new awakening of consciousness within this country and throughout the world. So I say, you know, regardless of what the repressors and colonizers say, I would say that we are on the side of three, and as more poetically, we're on the side of the angels, you know, because we want mm-hmm. to create a world where nobody is colonized or oppressed or suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. Patrick, are you still here? You're so quiet.
I sure am. I'm here. I'm here soaking up the wisdom, soaking up the energy.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Yes We Be.
Okay. Let's talk about it. So, you know, I had the opportunity. I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay. So I had the opportunity a little bit earlier to talk not only about Jackie Shelton Green's Messengers of the Lamb, but you just introduced what I consider to be a kind of a seminal call, and actually the quote that's at the foreword of the book, The Black Artist, from Amiri Baraka, and it's such an honor to have Elder Askia Touré on the phone. Really, the whole concept behind Yes We Be is being able to carry the baton from the Black Arts Movement, which carried the baton from the Harlem Renaissance, and to be able to carry it forward into the next generation. I'm a proud father of an 11-year-old son. I like to call him Shark Heart. He's on the USA swimming team. And we've got all sorts of issues with teachers in schools that like to sit there and teach history from a very narrow perspective. And then I start to understand. I almost hear it like it's almost a cleansing spiritually to listen to Jackie Shelton Green talk about her poetry and talk about what is, or to listen to Elder Askia Touré, or to have conversations with Big Brother Richard through Jakar Press as we're publishing Yes We Be throughout the course of the year. Those conversations are water to the spirit. They are the sky over our heads. It is the ground that we walk on. So, you know, it's important to have this perspective celebrated. It's important to have this perspective infused inside of our young folks. And so even as we speak right now, I've got young Shark Heart, who's at the Junior Olympics over here in San Diego, sitting next to me and listening to this conversation. Earlier this week, we had the opportunity to meet with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is also a great writer and somebody that believes very strongly in the movement and actually in a greater humanity, which is, you know, against the currents of what's going on right now. And so when we hear these voices, you know, even just talking to Elder Askia Touré during the course of the week prior to this conversation and talking about what we're going to be talking on this conversation, that stuff gives me the energy to do what I do working inside of the capital markets, or to do what I do at Christ Our Redeemer, African Methodist Episcopalian Church, and working with those folks. It gives me the energy that's requisite to do what needs to be done, so that, you know, the election of Trump is really just being, you know, Custer's last stand, as it were. On the one hand, you know, my goodness, to have somebody that can commit treason in the White House just hanging out there. But on the other hand, he sure is getting minority treatment inside of that White House. I didn't see Ronald Reagan receive that treatment. I didn't see George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush. Well, maybe George W. Bush. But I didn't see, you know, Nixon when I was born, or Ford receive that type of treatment. They were always respected. They were always, you know, lauded with a certain amount of integrity. That's absent, this complete environment. And so, you know, as we go through Custer's last stand and we move into the future of the 21st century, it's critical to remember where we came from, because, you know, just as after the date of November in 2016, after, you know, number 45 took office, I was on the phone with Godmother Jackie Shelton Green and Don Mizell, the producer, and I felt like I was on a, you know, I felt like a little kid inside of his room listening to his parents comfort him after something really traumatic had happened. And just to listen to Godmother Jackie Shelton Green saying, well, this is no big deal. We've been here before, and we've seen so much worse than this. And this is nothing compared to that. And that just helped put everything into perspective. So, you know, to have the opportunity, Celeste, you and I have spent time talking about conversations that you had in your living room with Maya Angelou and other folks that were from the Harlem Renaissance, the Black Arts Movement, the Black Panther Movement, and to be able to give voice to the poets, the thinkers, the intellectuals that came out of Oakland, California, out of Chicago. And right now we've got like a whole North Carolina party with Elder Askia Touré, Godmother Jackie Shelton Green, with Big Brother Richard Crowett from Jakar Press out of North Carolina. And to listen to these voices talk about the history and the battle scars that they've endured, it's tremendous. It's tremendously inspiring. So, you know, I would like to, if I can have your permission to do so, I'd like to sit there and give a retort to, or an answer to, the call that I'd given to Jackie Shelton Green, who will be the messenger of this land, to which I retorted, messages from the way. So I'd like to have your permission to be able to read that poem, because I think the poetry speaks for itself.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, by all means.
I take that permission from my elders. We the messengers write our blues songs blessed. We the messengers right the earth's wrongs. O immortal soul, waves splashed over coral singing as Mizell.
Jalal ad-Din Muhammad Rumi, mystic Persian and theologian. We the messengers are the prophets, the products from immortal pyramids. We the messengers turn on all the lights, all of them black lights in broad daylight. Shining at night, opening sights, buzzing, giving flight to black souls amassed. From the singular to Holy Spirit to African bazaar. We are the messengers unfurled from the mind of Queen Jackie. We are the ministers of Epiphany. These are powers, ours. But the truth is messenger. We take without proof. Love, says Mizell. Of the messengers, says Rumi, raise words. The messengers are rain, giving rise to soul flowers. On these frequencies, we the natives sing of knowing peace from a Lion King. We the messengers carry the spiritual deeds. We the messengers openly bleed. And I think that last line is a reference to what was talked about earlier in the conversation, where we were talking about grabbing influence from the spirits. They're all around us. There's so many. I mean, we live in one physical universe. We call it Earth, and supposedly there's a president that's in the White House. But there's so many different dimensions to this, and I've been communicating with these spirits for as long as I can remember now. I can remember pulling all-nighters, working on papers that were documenting Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness and calling it the white man's burden. And then my father, who was a professor of political science, would have to go to school because the teacher would give me a B for a paper that was excellently written. And my father, Dr. Howell, would come in and say, you know, what's wrong with this paper? I have kids at the community college that I teach, and they can't write at this level. What's wrong? And for the teacher to have to sit and defend the fact that the paper was excellently written, but he just didn't like the topical matter, to which my father would sit there and let him know lawsuits are part of everyday life and we should all just give the kid an opportunity to do an extra credit assignment, and then I would have to sit there and write some more. But, you know, to be able to have the opportunity to work with our elders, to hear their voice, to be able to read their poetry, to be able to spend time with them, and to be able to sit there and glean the pearls of wisdom from them is everything. So, you know, in many ways, that's what Yes We Be all about. It's about the response to the call that they gave so many years ago, these Civil War generals, these Civil War veterans, really, because it's a battle. It's a battle on a political level, social, metaphysical, spiritual level. And to be able to listen to these veterans, these have to have made the world that we live in right now, that made it possible for Black Panther, the movie by Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan, to even be made. Without...
I was wondering when that was going to come up.
I'm
glad you brought it up, brother.
Respect. Respect. I mean, we have to go through the Black Panthers in Oakland, California, where you spend a lot of time with Marvin X. Jackman. And the Black Panthers actually have to exist before this has the cultural relevance and nuance and significance that it does. So, you know, it's really just about taking the baton in the next generation, standing inside of our truth and not being afraid. We own the 21st century. We're already projecting ourselves out to the future for the next 100 and 200 years. We're very clear as to who we are. And like I said, you know, Custer's last stand, man. Have at it. Do your worst. Do everything you can because I'm not dead. And if we're not dead, then, you know, good luck. So, and I'd also like to talk a little bit about some of the artists that participated inside of the book, making it possible for what Richard has called artfully an integrated poet graphic experience. There was Jules Arthur out of New York City who was very kind to donate his image of the chain gang. There was also Ingrid Barz out of Germany, a white sister who does incredible, incredible, beautiful work. There was Akil Ka out of New York City donating his images. Also Quinn McGowan out of Tennessee. And there was also Malik, my brother. My brother Malik and Karen are carrying forth the movement as the new Ruby and Ozzy B of the Bay Area. And not only are they artists, but they're also leaders that are putting and populating the entire Bay Area. I'll be attending a gallery showing of his just as soon as Sharkhart is done with his Junior Olympics. And, you know, we're all networking and working with one another. I'd like to thank Brother Stephen Canton for his image at the beginning of the book. And then, of course, Kia Dyson, who contributed an image that was created by Danny Krawick, who is the graphic designer of this entire book. And it's been a wonderful experience to work with Jakar Press and understand what a community press does that the major, Simon & Schuster's and the Big Five Publishing, simply will not do. You know, they'll sit there and publish everything under the sun, and this is where the trend lines for the future come from, resisting arrest, feeding the light, you know, Yes We Be, which is, you know, in many ways, you know, there's my poetry in there, but I also gave a nod to the ancestors that come before us, and I've also given a nod to all the artists that come inside and inspire us with their incredible work. That's where the future is. So that's what Yes We Be is all about.
Okay. And you also talked about a quote that Richard from the book. Am I correct in that, Patrick?
Yeah, I don't have it from me, but the vision for the book and the integration of graphics and the integration of poetry into that singular experience came from Richard, and he talked about it early in our conversation today. But, you know, it was a vision that he had, and he implemented it to perfection. I mean, the book is beautiful. And,
it certainly is.
Thank you. Thank you, Elder Sciatore. And I'm so proud. I'm so proud to have spent the time working with Jakar Press, Danny and Richard, and their team, and what it is that they do to enable us artists to be able to get our voices into the world and take from the minds and these other realms that exist, and to be able to just put it, you know, bold face forward. So, you know, we're at the beginning promotional level. We'll be at the Los Angeles Book Expo inside of April. We're also planning events in North Carolina this year. And I was recently accepted into a retreat in Italy, of all places. And I'll be working down there with the, I think it's called the, you have to excuse me, this just happened earlier this week, but it's called the Breathe Free Press. And so, you know, I'll be, you know, doing poetry readings down there with Yes We Be, but also completing my novel project, Quarter Till Judgment Day. So, you know, really, Yes We Be is just about taking the baton, understanding what's been done for us, what's been sacrificed for us, and really just giving that respect and paying it forward and getting to the next generation. You know, like I said, my son is inside a class. He's being taught, you know, he'll have an assignment, and the teacher will say, you know, American Revolutionary War. There's George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, there's Thomas Jefferson, and there's Crispus Atticus. Chris, he'd like for you to be the slave. And he has to go announce himself as a slave in front of everybody. Now, whether Crispus Atticus, I love him and I have respect for him. But Chris knows that he has zero limitation in terms of who he can be. So when he's in the car and he's able to listen to me, you know, do this radio show and have a correction made to her in terms of what it is she's doing and how she's trying to project him and limit him in terms of his potential, that's what the book is about. It's about redefine ourselves. And that's a direct quote from Marvin L. Mills, co-purveyor of the Global International African Arts Movement.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you,
Great.
Elder. Yeah, thank
Great.
You.
In the tradition.
Well,
Miri used to say, in the tradition.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that.
Okay, in the tradition. Okay. I want to touch on Jackie, your founding of Sister Right before, you know, our time. I want to talk a little bit about that because it also has a definite effect on women and on writing your story. So can you tell me a little bit about how you founded Sister Right? And also, you're going to be doing a retreat in Morocco this year. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the first of many international retreats. So Sister Right was started in 2011. I was stricken with Lyme disease, which left me in a wheelchair for several years. And I couldn't read, I couldn't write, I couldn't move my upper body. My hands are still semi-crippled. So when I was in that wheelchair, I started to think about how the literary community, as I knew it before I became ill, had just, you know, gone on by its business, and there were new gatekeepers, and the millennials had pretty much taken over. So I started to think about how I was going to reinvent myself once I was able to get out of that chair. And for me, what I learned was that trauma can usher in a beauty that you aren't even expecting. And, you know, Sister Right emerged from that wheelchair. You know, what was I going to do? And what I started asking myself, you know, were like very basic questions like, how am I going to support myself? And where's the balance between, you know, art and making a living going to be able to intersect again? So one of the things that I have always wanted to do, a fantasy I had for many, many years, was to facilitate writing retreats for women writers. Sister Write also does a number of pop-up one-day writing workshops that are open to any writer, not just female. But our residential traveling residencies are for women. So that's where it started from. And I also had been to enough writing retreats in my life to know what I did not want Sister Write to be, but I did not want it to be workshoppy. I did not want it to be a conference of egos. I did not want it to be people coming, living in their, you know, in their intelligence. But I really wanted to provide a nurturing space for women who are basically caregivers for everybody and homemakers and juggling, you know, parenting and making a living with trying to be an artist as well. So Sister Write is a very nurturing space, and we have a series called Writing in Places That Matter. So this past summer, I was on the Jersey Shore, you know, doing a Sister Write residency. We've been invited to Martha's Vineyard. You know, we've done South Carolina. We've done Virginia. We actually were the first writers to visit the Ann Spencer House Museum in Lynchburg, Pennsylvania. I mean, in Lynchburg, Virginia. And Sister was a Harlem Renaissance writer, and her home is being preserved by her granddaughter. So I was the first writer since Dora Neale Hurston invited to write in her writing cottage. So that was one of our first away trips, and it was very, very powerful to be in the space that Ann Spencer had inhabited, and she was still there. Her energy, her spirit was everywhere. And to be able to sit on the bed where Langston Hughes, his favorite room in her house, was the Red Room, and to read the telegrams and to read these amazing letters that Sterling Brown would write to Ann Spencer. So I wanted to resurrect that sensibility of being in these magical places where creativity can be born over and over again. So Sister Write now owns a space in Morocco. That's Leap 8, and this will be our inaugural year of going there. I'll be there for a month. And magic happens when these women come together. People come working on works in progress. People come who are not writers. I've had people who work in iron who are sculptors come. I've had textile workers come, people who quilt, who make tapestries. I've had painters come, musicians come, who are just looking for the narrative in their work, because language is inside of the fire that forges the steel. And it's been magical to bear witness to the potency and the potential, you know, of what Sister Write has manifested for so many women.
Wow, I love the idea, though, that you're going to be in Morocco. I think Morocco by itself has so many, just the culture, the art, just being there is enough to really inspire some great art and great writing. So I'm going to be looking forward to what comes out of that particular retreat this year as you go forward.
And I wanted to tell you, so we are not, you know, people think of Morocco and they only think of Marrakesh and they only think of the fancy, beautiful Riyadh. But we are actually, the village home that we have is embedded in a Berber village in the Atlas Mountains.
Okay.
So we are kind of off the grid. We're off the grid. There is no Wi-Fi. You know, it's a mountain Berber village, where we will be nurtured and embedded in that culture. And to me, that is far more powerful than some of the other Moroccan excursions that I've experienced, which are the fancy, fancy, you know, hitting around.
Touristy-like.
You know, going out, partying. Mm-hmm. And we'll do a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm really happy to offer this really rough terrain. And I've said to women, you know, I need you to think about your comfortability, because we're not going to a 4-star riad. We might do that 2 years from now. But I am very drawn to these spaces that are raggedy in its beauty, you know, and just raw, you know. And
well, I love that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, where the English language is totally unimportant, because the people do not speak English. They do not speak French. This particular village does not speak Moroccan Arabic. I speak Arabic, but I don't speak Moroccan Arabic. So it's going to be a stretch to communicate with people through humanistic sensibilities, as opposed to trying to translate everything into English, you know. So we're excited, and we're looking forward to this.
Great, great. Well, looking forward to the inspiration. I know when I traveled to Europe and I was just beginning my writing career, it was just very rewarding to be off the beaten path, and stayed in some weird places that were actually, for me, it was pretty cool. So, you know, so I do get that about being off the beaten path. I always, I have friends that want to go to different places in Europe, and I'm always recommending, let me chart this out for you. Really go some places and really be inspired and really just be right in there. And like you say, embedded. So I think that's going to be actually very cool. I would love to hear some experiences when you come back from that retreat.
We should have a radio show while she's in Morocco. If we can arrange that by Skype or WhatsApp app.
That sounds wonderful.
Exactly. That would be great. She'd probably have to come into Morocco to do it, but that would actually be very nice to be able to do that.
We will buy Sims cards, so we'll have access for people. You know, there's an amazing science fiction writer coming from Oklahoma City who has 9 books, and she's working on her 10th book, and I know she's going to need. So we will buy Sims cards. So that's doable. Before we conclude, I wanted to respond to Brother Touré, because he was making me think hard. And, you know, I've read this quote by Amiri Baraka so many times. And when I think of the word hoard, and I have no idea what he was thinking, but at the end of that sentence, you know, because the word hoard also means tribe. And it also means soldiers. And I always take away from that.
I kind of think that's what Amiri was alluding to. The armed hoard.
You know, that we are
overthrowing oppression.
Yeah, we're soldiers. And I think that this conversation amongst us, all of us, just kind of bears witness to the power of what he's saying, that we are the warriors, we are the creative, you know, tribes that have to take the Black arts movement to the next level. And that's what this current generation, this current movement, you know, should be about. I mean, white supremacy is obviously not gone, and it's never even been abated. But I believe that Mary believes that the creative energy and empowerment and pride that's communicated through artistic expression, through writing, offers for this young generation some profound new spaces where they can find solace and solidarity, you know, and recognition. And I think about, you know, healing being a form of imagining a distance or recovery from trauma. And then I think that, you know, imagination itself is a form of creation. And, you know, and we dare, you know, how dare we imagine ourselves beyond, you know, trauma? How dare we imagine ourselves healed? Because we were, as Audre Lorde said, we weren't supposed to survive anyway. So I'd like to just say, you know, what a great opportunity today for us as tribes people you know, to really, really think about, you know, what our footprint's going to be. And to really, really think about, you know, how all of this is documented. As a person who teaches documentary poetry, you know, I'm always looking at poetry to document recent monumental events, you know, Black Lives Matter, Black Body Politics, gentrification.
Well, I think with Jackie Shelton Green, I think that's why you and Richard Crowley get along so well. You know, you're able. He provides. You're talking about documenting a lot of the work that you guys are doing with women, doing with literacy programs, with housing projects, homeless shelters, prisons. And I think that that's where, you know, Richard, sometimes he gets quiet because he's more a man of doing. Talk to Richard for too long, next thing you know, the book will show up inside of the mail. But that's how you and Richard work together, right?
I hear Jackie laughing because you said, sometimes I get quiet.
So let me interject. That is not why Rich and I get along so well. Rich and I get along so well because we've known each other for over 30 years, and we have built this tribehood. We have created across any boundaries of race, of gender. You know, we've had our ups and downs. We have more ups and downs. We rarely have downs, but we agree to disagree and to respect each other's humanity. And I don't care how good a writer you are. I don't care how deep you do your research. But if you don't have community and genuine trust, if you have not really embraced this person, you know, it's somebody who you know has your back and they know you have their back, you know what I'm saying? We can talk a whole lot of intellectual stuff, but it comes
down. We sure
down.
Can.
You and I have talked about this a lot, Patrick. It comes down to knowing who your real tribe is and how you move through the world inside of that tribe. And I think
I'd like to echo the sentiment that you echo to me all the time. I mean, I'll come to you with some flash in the pan stuff and you say, Patrick, I don't care. You'll say, Patrick, what I care is people to people. I care about the people that don't have the voice and being able to provide them with the voice. That comes from you consistently to me. And I must say that, you know, all of a sudden I start to have more of a view towards the homeless people that are in our community who aren't eating. Even as my son and I are eating and enjoying life at its highest levels, I look around me and I start saying, well, who's not eating? And I'm happy to sit there and make sure that meals are given to them from what we're doing because of you, because of you opening our eyes to the people that are voiceless and that are not seen in our environment.
I like what you said, because I just had a conversation with my daughter this morning, and we were talking about we were actually talking about the cradle of civilization. We were having a little learning conversation, but I reminded her that, and I like what you said about, you know, the humanity of man. I reminded her that my uncle never looked at people as Black, white, Mexican, or Indian. He looked at people and he would say, they're from this tribe. And he would even go as far as to say, this is the characteristics of this tribe, and this is their characteristic, and they're from that tribe. And so I was reminding her today that you have to look at, you know, don't look at people for what the world, or I would say America, likes to put us in little boxes. I reminded her of our family looks at people as tribes, because it helps us understand that we are all part of the human race.
I think one of the things that writing can do is that it can actually make people feel that connection when they otherwise don't. I can remember I was working with a man on death row doing a series of fiction workshops, and at the end he said, in talking about the class, he said, this is the first time in my life I ever felt my life had value. And I thought of that. Thought about if anyone had intruded on this person's life and made him feel he had value, he might not have committed whatever crime society thought they had a right to murder him for.
Exactly, right. You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. Well, I know that, you know, I really appreciate having you all on the program today, and I really look forward to having you come back, you know, having you come back to the program. That's one of the things that our interest here at Vertical is to continue to enhance the knowledge of individuals, but also to create community bridges in the sense of neighborhoods and communities worldwide and through creative and innovative individuals. So definitely would love to have you all here again to talk about what your newest projects are or what you have been doing. I really like, since me and Patrick talked about having this series as part of Vertical Radio, it's been really good. I've gotten a lot of great individuals have contacted me and told me about how they like meeting the individuals we have. And I'll tell you, I'm currently in Arizona, and one of the things I like to, we currently started a local newsletter. Our magazine is online and it is global, and we currently started a new one because we had so many people that were really hungry about learning who was out there. We have the poetry slams, and we have the, you know, we have the open mics here, and we have a lot of creatives that are doing some things, but in a way, there's a lot that are not connected. There's little areas, little pockets that are not connected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we hope to do with our program on the radio, is to be able to connect those little pockets so they can not only learn from the elders, but they can always, like you said, Tori, they can also be a part of pushing the movement forward, even in their little place where they're at, pushing it forward and to join some of these other communities that are really getting out here and just pushing that agenda forward. So I really appreciate having you all here today, and you know, and your commitment to really helping other people.
Indeed,
thank
that's,
you
that's
very
what
much.
It's all about. Thank you, Celeste.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'd like, if any of you have something that you want to leave us with, to contribute with, you know, just identify who you are and just say, you know, what you'd like to give us here in this conversation. This is a conversation that's ongoing. This is a conversation that we will be, you know, having you back with. But is there anything you'd like to say in the last moments of our program? Let's go.
I would like to share a short poem, if that is permissible.
Okay. I would love to hear that.
It's to the younger generations, but particularly the young brothers in the streets who go through a kind of hell. It's called The Usual Suspect. Midnight, werewolves howling, killer Batmobiles whose sirens are blue graffiti against the ghetto's inky walls. Maniacs, psychopaths unleashed against the Bantu nation resonant with blues. Who walks these mean streets beside innocent youths, absent of rites of passage and ancestral blessings, raging with hip-hop anger, slender frames in baggy pants, whose fades and dreadlocks shine like bullseyes in the hellish American nightmare.
Okay. Thank you, Astia Torre. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
And I'd like all of you
to be with everyone.
Yes, it is.
Well, I'd like all of you to leave our audience with, how can they get in touch with you? Jackie, how can they get in touch with you, especially if they're interested in the Sister Light?
S-I-S-T T-A, and then the word write, capitalized.com, sisterwrite.com.
Okay, great. And Richard?
They can go to our website, JACARPRESS, and in my Massachusetts accent, I is the letter R. So it's JACARPRESS.
All right. All right. And Askia Touré.
Yes. Could I leave my email?
Yes, you can.
That's in small letters. Askia. That's ASKIA 38 at yahoo.com.
All right. And Patrick.
Well, of course, I want to promote and speak about Jakar Books and my book being released on there, but I want to encourage everybody to go to blogtalkradio.com/vertical-live-radio, your radio show, and please take a look at the catalog of shows that are on here that support artists, poets, authors, and is really quite an amazing thing, particularly in this day and age when funding has been cut back nationally. That this show is here. It's doing a lot of work internationally with artists all around the UK, throughout the continental United States. So I just want to promote your brand, and I want you to be able to leave the website for Vertical Radio so that people will know to come here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
So if you're interested in submitting a program or getting to know what we do at Vertical Live Radio, you can contact us at Live Radio, LIVERADIO, at verticallifemagazine.com. And that vertical is with a K, not a C, so it's VERTIKAL, lifemagazine.com. And definitely I appreciate everyone who's been on the program. If you missed the information given by our guests, you can also contact us there, and we will make sure the guests get the information, again, at Live Radio at verticallifemagazine.com. Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate
you being on the program.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Richard.
And I'm going to be looking forward. I'm looking forward to having you all again. Yes, for sure.
Thank you
okay,
so much.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you. And have a great day, everyone.
Enjoy your day.
Have a great
day. Likewise. God bless.
Enjoy your day.
God bless.